Dr. Rhonda Grieve, welcome to Microscopio.
Thank you. Welcome, Belen.
In this interview, we wanted to talk about e-learning, a model to support ongoing education. And our first question is, what can you tell us about ongoing education and ISO 15189-2012?
Well, let me start with ISO 15189-2012. ISO being the International Standards Organization and 15189 being our standard for medical laboratories. And this standard is really divided into two parts. It's divided into a management component and a technical component. So how well we actually do the test is the technical component. And the management component comes out of 9001 ISO. And within that management component, it actually very, very clearly states that the laboratory director is responsible to ensure that ongoing education is available for all staff within the laboratory. And I don't believe this is just the responsibility of the laboratory director. I think it's also the responsibility of the individual staff member to ensure that. But why do we actually care about ongoing education? It's, I think, because we really want to ensure the quality of our results to support good decisions for our patients. And a good decisions for our patients actually affects every decision made. About 70% of those are based on our laboratory results. So if we actually do not have good decisions, timely and up-to-date and current practice decisions, we are not doing the best for our patients. So I think here, ongoing education, quality and ISO all go hand in hand.
Yes, and what are the best methods for continuing education for professionals?
I think that's a very difficult question to answer, to be truthful. I don't think there is a best method overall. I think e-learning is a very good method, but it really depends on your environment that you're in and also the style of learning that you're probably going to be involved in and how you actually learn yourself. So let me start with that. In terms of how you learn, some people, let's think about how you might actually learn if you're listening to this. Do you think you're a visual learner? Do you learn by looking? Do you learn by listening as an auditory learner? Or do you think you learn by touching, that kinesthetic feel, that touch, the tactile learning? Now, I'd probably say I'm the best learner by the touching or the tactile learning approach, if I was saying for me. Someone else who might be listening might be saying I'm a very good visual learner. Once I see it, I'm done. And then others will say, once I hear it, I'm fine. Now, if I put this into a non-science context, now, I'm a terrible auditory learner. I hope I do listen to people, but I'm a terrible auditory learner. If someone asks me or tells me, more to the point, about where to go in directions, they'll say, now, go down to this street and turn right, and then go down 500 metres and turn left, and then go another 350 metres and turn right again, and then they'll give me a fourth direction and I will be totally lost. I will have got the first two if I'm lucky, and then I would have had to have asked someone. And I'm a terrible auditory learner. I cannot do that very well. But I think I am a very good tactile learner, and I do from practice and experience. So I don't think there is one mechanism of learning. Let me just jump to the next part of the question then, in terms of if we all have got different learning styles, there is not one learning approach that's going to fit all of us all the time. So when we actually learn, we actually need to apply different mechanisms and across the learning to ensure different types of learning styles are accommodated. So let's look at learning styles. There are approximately seven different types of approaches. the learning. We can do straight lectures or tutorials. We can move on to approaches of doing demonstrations. We can do practice. Now, my favourite learning style happens to be teaching others. And when we actually look at some of the very old, maybe not quite robust statistics on this, and we actually see that teaching others actually gives a very good learning approach. So there's different ways of doing this. In reality, learning is about opportunity. And e-learning helps to create an opportunity for learning that doesn't exist for some people, some groups. So, and it also is a very effective, cost-effective approach for learning. It helps to not get repetition. Sometimes people will have to give a lecture 10 times, whereas if they record it once, it can be delivered, that recording, 10 times. And so that creates efficiency and it frees up time to do sometimes the more productive things. But more importantly, it's available 24/7 and it can reach a wider group. So if I'm in an urban city, I'm in Melbourne, Australia, and we have a very good and thriving AACB, Australasian Association of Clinical Biochemists, Victorian branch here. It is a fantastic branch, and we all get together within Melbourne and actually meet on a monthly basis and have fantastic scientific ongoing education opportunities. But if we are 100 kilometres out of Melbourne, it becomes more difficult, and then 200 kilometres becomes more difficult. So the people out of Melbourne don't have those same opportunities. I could be any city in the world and it would be the same scenario here. The people who are working in the peripherals, in the regional and country areas, don't necessarily have the same opportunities to do that face-to-face meeting. Now, it's really important that we all have these opportunities in different ways, and this is where e-learning actually supports this. And why do we need it? Well, someone's health in the country is just as important as someone's health in the city. So we've got patients in the country and patients in the city. So e-learning and ongoing education supports good quality practices for our patients. So that's why we're all doing it. That's why we're all here. That's why you're probably listening to me right now.
Yes, that's very interesting. What can you tell us about the IFCC e-Academy?
Well, the IFCC e-Academy is a really significant initiative of the IFCC. And one of the first things that I really loved about it and why I wanted to be involved and why I am still involved and will continue to be involved is that its aim is to provide ongoing education freely to the world effectively, but most importantly to ongoing professional development for emerging economies. So countries that mightn't have their own good infrastructure of ongoing education. And many of the things that I actually just said before about not reproducing things, if we can get all these recordings up, people can still get together if they're in the city and play the recording within a group of 10, 20, 30, 40, and then have a discussion afterwards in their own time as part of a group. But if they're in the country, they can actually also do it on their own computer in a quiet environment, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the aim of the IFCC e-Academy is actually to promote an open educational resource that can be created and is reviewed by IFCC experts for continuing professional development. of the members of the IFCC family, and that's everyone around the world, effectively, who's involved in laboratory medicine. And so I think this is a fantastic initiative of the IFCC, and that's how and why I've become involved with the IFCC. Now, anything good doesn't come easily, and this initiative's really started, I think, as the idea back in 2011. 2012, the committees were formed, and it wasn't until about 2015 that really the first pilot was actually launched. And this was the mass spectrometry pilot program for the E-Academy. And the E-Academy grappled with issues of copyright and all of those things that have been sorted out over time. And most recently, and it is so close to being released as I'm doing this interview now, the IFC's curriculum is about to be launched. And this is a really, really exciting that this is happening. But it takes time, it takes effort, and I hope a lot of good thought, and I hope it will be useful for ongoing education.
Could you please tell us about the Deming Simple Plan to PDCA, also known as Plan Do Study Act approach?
Well, may I start with telling you just a very tiny bit about Edward Deming. So Edward Deming was from the US, and Deming actually went to Japan back in the late 50s, 60s, and started talking about quality. And the quality was really the way forward. And he started preaching this, and I call it preaching, to industry in Japan. Now, people used to actually say bad things about Japanese products. And certainly when I was little, the name of a Japanese product was not very good. If we think of it now, the name of a Japanese product is very, very good. And when we think of Japan, we think of quality. And a lot of that actually comes from Deming. Now, one of the people that actually took up Deming's idea of quality was Toyota. And Toyota really took that up, and they actually took up Deming's ideas of quality and moving forward in a quality way to actually produce good cars. Now, what we do in laboratory medicine, a lot of people don't like me saying this, we're producing a good product as well. Toyota's producing a good car. Our good product is our result. And really, there's very little difference. We are producing the result as our product. So the PDCA cycle is actually a four-part cycle. The first part is planning. The second part is doing. And I think after the doing, that's where many organisations or many groups actually tend to stop. They don't do the checking and then acting out on the checking. And the PDCA cycle, when you actually do this four-part process, is considered a cyclical process. So you actually never stop with this process. And in many ways, this four-part process, Toyota has expanded further into an eight-step process, and which is clarifying the problem, breaking down the problem, and moving all the way through to standardised successful procedures. And I won't go through the rest of that. But whether it's eight-part or four-part, it's really embedded in the same way in our ISO 15189 quality system management component. And it's embedded there by the concept of continuous improvement. Now, how can we continually improve if we are not doing our improvement process well? If we don't continually improve and we don't do our improvement process well, or we don't know what to do well, we can't improve our quality. So if we don't know what to do, that's a lack of education in many ways. if we don't do it well, it's a lack of utilizing the Deming process. And then that ends up being probably a poor quality overall ongoing of patient care, which is what we're all about in laboratory medicine. So the PDCA cycle is very much about that. And it can be applied to anything. And it can be applied to ongoing education and actually implementing it and doing it. And so in many ways, we can actually just use this approach for whatever we're doing. Now, recently, I spoke in Vietnam on talking about the PDCA cycle, but I actually talked about it in terms of the term Kaizen, which is a Japanese term on continuous improvement. And really, the Kaizen process is actually looking at the PDCA cycle, but for very small changes and in a way of implementing it. And if we, every time we develop a module for education, an ongoing education, that is a small process, but it all adds up, and we do have to check that process up through and then act on that checking.
What can you tell our audience about the World Health Organization e-health plan?
Well, the World Health Organization e-health plan is actually divided into really four processes in the PDCA cycle, and there can be an analogy with that. They aim to engage with stakeholders and establish a government mechanism and then look at strategic approaches with government. Now, they assessing the current e-learning environment in terms of the components that already exist, as well as existing programs and projects that will deliver ongoing education. So if we actually think about e-health, we can actually embed e-learning for health professionals within the e-health portfolio of the WHO. It isn't necessarily a standalone. If we want good health outcomes, we need good ongoing education. So in many ways, they link very well.
Thank you very much, Dr. Vonda Greaves. It's been a pleasure to have this interview in Microscopio.
Thank you very much, Belen.